Before the opening night of the Chicago premiere of James Imes' powerful and provocative Kill Move Paradise, the show's dramaturgs, Jared Bellett and Kenya Hall, sat down to talk about the power of this show, what drew them to wanting to be a part of it, and why audiences must experience this barrier-breaking play. We hope you enjoy listening to this exclusive conversation.
Hi, I'm Jared.
I am Kenya.
And we were the dramaturgs for Timeline Theater's production of Kill Move Paradise that you are seeing right now. Kenya, this is the first time we got to work together like this, which was really exciting.
Yeah, I was really excited when you approached me and asked me to help you with this project, because I know you've done so much beautiful dramaturgy around the city, and I thought it'd be a really awesome experience to learn from you and get to see your approach to it. And it's like so holistic, which is really awesome, because a lot of the stuff that I've done has been very packet-based and focused on the facts, but it's impossible to do that with this show. So just seeing how we got to navigate that was really, really awesome and fun.
Yeah, it's exciting. I think dramaturgy at Timeline has always been really exciting to me because it's not just simply dates and historical facts, but looking at, like, what is the context for this show? Because it's impossible, especially with a show like Kill Move Paradise, I think, it's impossible to, like, distill it down simply. People keep asking me, oh, what's this show about? And I always respond, oh, well, that's a great question. It's about a lot of things. And I try and, like, stumble through it, but I always end up saying it's about a lot of things because I think James Imes wrote a play that's about just nuance and a multitude of histories and experiences. But with that being said, understanding that this is a play about a lot of things, Kenya, I'm curious, if you had to describe this play in three words or less, how would you do so?
Okay, so it is a play about a lot of things. I think waiting, emoting, transformation.
Ooh.
I feel like transformation's kind of an easy one.
It counts.
Think, what about you? What are your three words?
I would go with exhilarating, absurd, and soul-wrenching.
Oh.
Soul-wrenching might be two words, but I'm hyphenating it, so it counts.
Yes, it
I
counts.
Loved it. I'm curious, when you read the script for the first time, way back when, do you remember what initially stood out to you or what moments were resonating with you?
Yeah, the thing that stood out to me was how this play kind of defies any particular form. In terms of if you try to follow it logically, it won't make sense because things come at you not randomly. Everything feels very purposeful, but it's all very surprising. Like, you never really know where we're going to head next. And in the pieces that feel more performative, more theatrical, there is a lot of history there that it might be hard to catch if you aren't really familiar with, like, a lot of the ways in which this country has treated Black people. But it comes out in a way that doesn't really slap you in the face, but it just is insidiously underneath all of it. Because the play is more about these men than the ways in which they have been treated by this country, which I think is a really brilliant act on the part of the playwright, because it gives the focus to them in a very beautiful way. So that's the main thing that jumped out at me when I first read the script. What about you? What, like, drew you to the script?
Yeah, I think everything you just described, and I think also the poetry of the language. I think James writes really, really beautiful words. And I think it's striking that, like, in looking at the humanity of these people whose stories we're watching, that we are seeing both sort of these large historical arcs and these large sort of social cues about what it is to be Black and a Black man in America, but we're also seeing these very personal, very intimate moments with them, and the way James creates words for them brings tears to my eyes every time.
Yeah, it's amazing that these characters are kind of composite characters for people who have been killed due to police brutality, but they all feel very specific and very fleshed out and very full. And that's something that we don't always get to see.
Yeah, and I think that's so true, right? 'Cause that's an important thing to remember about this play is there are moments in this play that allude to real life folks who lost their lives due to police brutality, right? We hear pretty significant sort of social markers. We hear, "I can't breathe." We see hands up. We hear about a young boy playing with a toy gun. But these characters are sort of not based on a single person. They are composites of many people, which I think speaks to this idea that it is this larger social epidemic and not just a matter of four high-profile cases, right? We're talking hundreds of Black folks killed every year at the hands of police officers, and really exploring what that means through these characters and their stories.
Yeah, and I know this is jumping ahead a little bit, but the list of names that's listed, I actually did a show last year that also had a moment of tribute to The Fallen, where we just say the names, and the line in the show where it's good to say the names, it truly is, like, even though it is sad that these people are gone, celebrating them in this way really is cathartic and beautiful and emotional. And I remember, like, in the first read-through, when someone's saying, like, oh, this list is going on for so long, but then it goes on for so long that you realize that it has to in order to fully commemorate the significance of what we're witnessing.
And I think the list reminds us that this play is living history, and reminds us that it is something that is ongoing, right? The list started, and James added to it as he was writing the play, and sort of in his stage directions, in his note to the creative teams that work on the production, talks about how he hopes that folks will continue to add to the list and update it with, unfortunately, the names that have been added to it since the play was published originally. I think we added 27 names to our production from what was in the published script, which, again, is still not a complete picture of all of the lives lost, but simply sort of a snapshot to sort of capture the larger sort of social ills. And I think when I think of the history involved in this play, I also think so much about the room of requirement, as we've come to call it, that sort of hidden room. The first time I read the play, that's actually one of the things that stood out to me the most, the room of requirement, where they sort of just go through this list of, like, wild and absurd, like, some however many objects and, like, pieces of history and themes that just capture the, like, vast history of Blackness in this country, which I think is so beautiful. And I remember the very first time I heard it was a couple years ago at Victory Gardens at the Ignition Fest, where it had a reading. And I heard that and I was like, oh, this is a timeline show. Because this is a play this is history. That is, like, that, like, minute and a half long segment of the play. I'm like, that's timeline. That's timeline's mission right there. That's yesterday's stories, today's topic. That is everything, right? And that moment just, I think, again, grounds us in sort of this larger historical experience and reminds us that even though this is a play that takes place in the ambiguous present day sort of afterlife, that it is a play grounded in history and guided by history and informed by history. And I think that's so, so beautiful about this play.
Yeah, and I feel like we really embrace that with this production. Just a lot of the physicality that is used in the show also takes us through a period of time. Like, you can see the way that the characters shift and how they use their bodies throughout the play. And so not only with language, but with physicality, do we get to see that history. And because it's such an ongoing thing, this play will always be historically relevant. Well, hopefully not always, but...
Yeah, James talks about that. He's like, I hope one day this play won't feel relevant anymore, but here we are.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Another thing about the list that for Chicago theater goers, if you're seeing any other James I.M. shows that are happening in the city, because there could be more, it's a motif that he uses in often in his work, which is so effective. Like, you would never think that just listing objects can take you somewhere in that way. And they're in a very specific order, but the order jumps through different periods of time and not only touches at, like, significant moments, like, for example, the burned out bus or the burned out church, but it also touches it just, like, pieces that have carried Black people through generations, like cast iron skillets and castor oil and just little pieces that you can always fine, and they remind you of home, and they remind you of your ancestors. Yeah.
I remember having a conversation with Wardell early on in the process about the emotional history, right? And emotional history is not necessarily the same as temporal history, but that idea that especially for Black folks in America, whose history is often deleted or shredded or forgotten or not spoken about or learned about in classrooms and communities, that sort of, for Black folks, it's often had to be sort of that emotional history of storytelling, of relationship, and sort of we see that in the list, which reminds us then that history is political, right? And this play is super, super political.
Yes.
And James talks about, in all of his writing, talks about how for him, art is political and his art is activism. And I think it's so wonderful that we get to see how the remembering of history, the naming of names, the sort of timeline of objects, and sort of that physical history can also remind us and situate us deeply in the political present.
Yes, and I love that he says, it should be active, it should be political, but it should also be entertaining.
It should be funny.
It should be fun.
Because
it is.
And
this show is so much fun. I mean, like, until it's not. It's so much fun. And it just draws on so many aspects of performance that we've seen throughout Black history, through the evolution of Black performance in this country. We get it from the beginning with vaudeville and like some elements of minstrelsy, to the end, to like hip hop, to doo-wop. Like, there's so much encapsulated in this play. And that's also part of the journey through history itself as well. Like, just the music and the musicality of the language and how that shifts. So it's fun.
And I think that juxtaposition is so important. And I think it's something we try to think about a lot in our dramaturgical work and thinking and curating the lobby. We have out in the lobby a video piece by an artist, Arthur Jaffa, called Love is the Message, the Message is Death. And it like similarly splices this video that is like both joyous and celebratory and then very hard to watch, hurtful, violent, and sort of the reality that for Black folks in America, that's often the experience, right? That you will have these high highs and you will have these low lows, and that's a Tuesday. And it is what it means to sort of exist in this country and sort of exist in this history. But I think for us really wanting to focus not just on the tragedy, sort of alongside sort of what these artists were creating in the rehearsal room, but in our dramaturgical process, to also not focus just on the tragedy or the trauma, but actually to focus on the celebration, right? You mentioned earlier with the list how in speaking the names, sort of there's pain and there's sadness and there's hurt. But I know in creating the wall that's in our lobby that sort of honors the voices of the fallen, it was some of the toughest dramaturgical work I've had to do at Timeline, and sort of took an emotional toll. But also, in a way that I wasn't expecting, was a celebration and was actually really joyous to get to, like, read about these people, right? And not read about their deaths or not read about sort of a profile or an obituary, but to read about these people and their families and the remembering, which, again, when we think of how this play is a political act, I think that's so, so important.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be a nice and refreshing surprise for our audience members who get to see that lobby, because so many times, especially with social media, when these killings happen, like, people's faces are splattered all over people's timelines. you see it just with the act of the murder. You don't really see anything else. You just see what the news is reporting, because the news has to be objective. But with this lobby, when you see those faces, you see quotes from family members, you see beautiful ways that these people have impacted the world. And it's just like such a nice, refreshing surprise to see these names and see them with something positive. Even the color scheme that has been selected is just so uplifting. Like, it's bright, it's colorful, it's the sky, it's elevation. And that, I feel like, puts our audience in the right place for going in to see this show.
Yeah.
And also going back to Love is the Message, it's just wild how each of those high highs and each of those low lows is such a visceral punch. Like, it just, it hits you and it makes you jump around emotionally. And our play does that as well in so many ways. Like, each time you get a moment of laughter, you also get a moment of pain.
Yeah.
And again, like you said, that's a Tuesday.
It's a Tuesday or a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Do we have Mondays off? No, also Monday.
Also Mondays. And I think that experiential aspect of the play is the only way to truly convey what it is like to be a Black person in this country. Like, you cannot list the different ways in which history has impacted us. You can only feel them in order to truly understand. And even then, it's impossible to truly understand unless it's an experience that you've experienced for yourself. But at least with the absurdism, like, one of the points of absurdism is to have the audience feel what's happening instead of just, like, know what's happening. And that play does this so effectively because the audience is not let off the hook. Even though no one is asked specifically to do anything in the audience, you are asked to take part in this experience, to take part in this story. The characters engage with the audience in a way that I don't often see, because it's not, you know, like, active, like, come get up on stage and do this, but it's like this whole room is the stage and this whole room is Kill Move Paradise, and you are an active participant in what we have to go through right now. In a way that's inviting and not alienating.
Yeah. You're asked to bear witness and be present and be participatory.
Yeah. And hopefully in doing that, you will be able to go out into the world and continue to do that and continue to not only witness but to testify against what is being seen, because this is a problem that affects all of us as a country, and even as a world. Like, it happens everywhere, even though we're only focusing on the subsect of our society in the United States of America. But it's a communal experience, and it should be communally addressed.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Kenya, thank you so much for chatting with me.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. If you want to see other James Imes show this season in Chicago, check out Ms. Martha over at Steppenwolf Theater. Check out White, produced by Definition Theater Company, also at Steppenwolf Theater in their 1700 space. And make sure you tell everyone about Kill Move Paradise and keep coming back. We're so excited to have you here. Kenya, so excited to work with you on this.
Yes, same.
Until next time.
Until next time.
Thank you for listening to this exclusive conversation with Kill Move Paradise dramaturgs Jared Bellett and Kenya Hall. Learn more about the show and how to get tickets to our Remote View stream at timelinetheater.com/remoteview. Kill Move Paradise is now streaming online through April 19th, 2020.